when I was in Israel on the Olmsted and Fulbright Canada field study, I could just see through the political sphere that there are not enough women in leadership positions. There are some women, and there are some very influential women, but there still need to be more women. And until changes are made, it's very hard for there to be the substantial change that needs to happen. And although there is the caveat that perhaps not all women are looking to advance gendered policy and female-friendly policy, having more women within politics and in diplomacy is just so crucial to have.
I wanted to mention that you did take part in a field study, as you stated, that was conducted in conjunction with the Olmsted Foundation and Fulbright Canada in Israel. This field study analyzed the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In addition to what you've already discussed, can you please tell our audience more about your experience overall taking part in a study that analyzed the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Well, what's very interesting about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is that in terms of history, it's fairly new in terms of, say, borders. A lot of people peg the conflict back to the 48 Agreement, where Israel got its own state after World War II. And so since it's such a new land dispute, everybody in Israel is affected somehow by conflict, whether or not it's because they fought in the Israeli Defense Forces or their family had moved to Israel because it's a Jewish state from a diaspora country, or because people feel that the creation of Israel has had a negative effect on a family member who's in the West Bank or Gaza. Everyone there has some form of involvement with the conflict, which is substantially different than in Canada, where in terms of human security, we don't feel that we're threatened in the same everyday scale as people there are. And it's very interesting to talk to people, to hear their personal stories about the conflict, to see even if you talk to somebody on the street, everybody has an opinion, versus if you ask somebody in Canada about a policy decision made, it's more likely than not that they'll have no idea what you're talking about. Another thing about the field study that I learned is the more you learn about the conflict, the harder it is to form conclusions. You can learn the facts and the historical detail within days, but the complexities of this conflict are so extreme and they're so crucial to trying to peace build or find a solution. It's not as simple as a one-state or two-state solution that's always talked about. There's so much more to the conflict. There's so much more to the resolution that isn't typically discussed within typical newspaper article or an interview.
With your experience taking part in this field study, you had an opportunity as a journalist to conduct interviews, to take part in this field study, to examine the ongoing issues. And for those who are listening to this interview today, who perhaps are interested in pursuing a career in the field of journalism, with your journalistic skills, what is the best advice that you can give to a young professional out there who is interested in examining similar issues as you have throughout your field study?
I think the first thing is that you have to be open to hearing different opinions and be able to embrace and, I guess, ready to hear things that might even make you feel uncomfortable with, I guess, some restriction always to keep yourself safe. But you have to be ready and eager to put yourself out there to talk to people. In terms of interviewing, I think the most valuable thing that I learned how to do is to listen to what they're not saying, to find meaning in what they're telling you, because every word in a 5-minute, 10-minute, 20-minute interview is chosen for a reason. People will tell you the story that they want you to hear to get a certain message to take away from. And in such a loaded conflict like the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and you only have a certain amount of time, the person's trying to deliver you a particular message, whether it's their personal opinion, it's an anecdote or story, or the mandate of an organization or a government. there is a message and being able to find it, even through what's not being said in words, but through meaning, is something that I found very, very important through this field study.
And Marissa, I want to mention that a central focus of the project that you were involved with consisted of the integration of a gendered analysis to peace and conflict studies. In addition to all of the work that you have done, can you please discuss some of your findings as a result of integrating a gendered perspective to conflict? And on top of that, can you also discuss the significance and the impact of including a gendered lens to conflict analysis?
Well, what people don't typically realize about conflict is that it's extremely gendered. People consider gender and conflict to be completely separate ideas, but in reality, they're not mutually exclusive. There's so much overlap. And it's crucial within a field study about conflict to consider gender, because everybody and everything is incredibly gendered. And in terms of specifically the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, women are disproportionately impacted in a negative way by conflict. Whether or not it's through the humanitarian lens, where women have to often leave school to stay in the domestic household, it's harder to find food and to provide for a family. That's really something I saw, especially in terms of legal work. It's very hard to get from some areas in either Gaza or the West Bank into Israel to even conduct business. And a lot of the time you'll see in different markets, women on the ground trying to sell their products and are bused between Israel and their homes to be able to even make a little bit of income for their families to support them. In terms of the Israeli Defense Forces, their army is very unique because they conscript both men and women to the army. So in terms of conflict, it's a huge thing right there. Both men and women are involved in, on the Israeli side, fighting against the conflict, and all contribute in very different ways to trying to keep peace and stability within Israel. Whether or not it's through intelligence or boots on the ground, both men and women do not have the same restrictions as, say, within the Canadian Armed Forces. I believe around over 90% of the Israeli Defense Forces is open to both men and women. So that right there is a huge part of contributing to the gender analysis and integrating a gender perspective, because right there you have both men and women contributing. And even within men and women, the Israeli Defense Forces are open to the LGBTQ community, and they don't face the same type of discrimination that you hear about in Western media of other states. For them, a pressing part of the conflict is maintaining human security and making sure that Israel is a safe place. So it's more about having people who are invested in Israel than your gender or sexual orientation, which seems to have barriers in other Western countries. And then even in politics, you'll be able to see how gender is impacted. You have certain female politicians, such as Tzipi Livni, who's very involved in politics at the Israeli federal level, who are good examples of what we talked about before, female leadership and being able to be there as a women in terms of providing perhaps like mentorship or helping other women get involved within politics in Israel. So you can see it's so significant. What we found is how important gender is to studying conflict, because if you omit gender, you're omitting such an important part of conflict resolution and post-conflict reconstruction. Because when you devalue part of your population in such a way and don't take into account the serious consequences that men and women uniquely face within conflict, it's going to be impossible to find a stable solution.
I sincerely want to thank you for conducting all of the research that you have conducted. And as someone who is clearly passionate about women in security and many other fields pertaining to international affairs, international relations, global affairs, diplomacy, I think that it is so important to have young professionals and young women such as yourself who have a voice, who can share their expertise with an audience. I'm certain that there are many young women and young professionals out there who look up to you, who look up to the work that you're currently doing. As the former program editor of Global Horizons here at the NATO Association of Canada, and currently as Canada's NATO podcast contributor and outreach coordinator, I can say that I'm impressed with the work that you've done here at the NATO Association of Canada. I think that for any professional journalist traveling to a different part of the world to examine the issue, to examine the ongoing conflict, any ongoing conflict, is something to be looked up to, because oftentimes in journalism, there are journalists who will conduct an interview or will release a publication, but it's based on what they heard externally. It's based on what they heard from the news or from the media. But to take the initiative to actually travel and to go to a different part of the world, to go to Israel, to take part in the field study, to examine the ongoing issues, to look at strategies that could be implemented, to look at the policies, is certainly something that, in my opinion, real journalists do. And in the world of diplomacy and international relations, I think the best kind of journalism and the best kind of journalist that you can find is one who will travel, will take part in various studies, will listen to opinions from different people that they talk to. And like you said, it might not necessarily be something that you want to hear, but it's a part of journalism. So again, I want to thank you for this interview. And as the program editor of Women in Security here at the NATO Association of Canada, for all of the listeners out there who are interested in getting a hold of you, what is the best way to reach you?
The best way is probably by email or on Twitter. My email is young.j.marissa@gmail.com. And my Twitter handle is @Marissa_JYoung. I'm always happy to provide advice to anybody who is seeking out how to get more involved in, within women in security. And I encourage anybody who is looking to get more involved with the field to seek out those mentors, because that's the most important way where you're going to be able to jumpstart a career or perhaps even just pursue your interests.
And for those who are interested in learning more about you, where do you see yourself 5 years from now? I know it's a it's an interesting question, but the reason why I ask it is because sometimes people plan on pursuing graduate studies, or they plan on pursuing a PhD, or they plan on pursuing diplomacy. So in your mind, what would be ideal for you 5 years from now?
Well, I'm hoping to pursue some graduate work. I have one more year of my undergraduate left and then a year of graduate work. And ideally, in a dream world, I'd love to stay involved with the international organizations, perhaps in terms of policy advisement and gendered policy advisor, to be able to help critically construct these influential gendered policies that can then go into these organizations and implement substantial change for women.
And any final words for our listeners today?
Mentorship is so key and it's crucial. So be able to make those connections and stay in touch with anybody who you feel has their career or academics aligned with your interests. So it's so, so important.
Wonderful. Marissa, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.